This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Happy New Year! Place to Be Wrestling Network. Yes! Finally, there is a one replacing the fucking zero. Welcome, everyone, to your home for modern-day wrestling. Place to Be Nation's main event. I am your tri-host, Scott Criscolo. We are indeed in 2021. And a lot of people didn't like the seven-day trial, so they're trading it in and waiting for 2022. But things will be better. I guarantee that, particularly in wrestling. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight, though. We are going to talk about 2020, sadly, but on, you know, more fun topics, because as Nate, as my cohorts talked about in our last original show, 2020 had some ups in professional wrestling, had some downs as well. But tonight, oh my God, we open the year with a bang, damn it. It might be better than Goldberg on Raw or Sting on Dynamite. This guy's better than both of them. But let me bring in my compadre, Happy New Year to the Godfather, Nate Milton.
What's going on, Scotty? What's going on, everybody? It was a Happy New Year until 6 days in, that man Terry Bollea showed up on my damn TV screen. Hey, this is how you going to do me 2021 with Hulk Hogan making iPhone jokes, because it's so topical, ladies and gentlemen. But no, I'm feeling good, Scotty. We made it through. I'm looking forward to this week's show because, unfortunately, listeners, we don't have a stimulus check for you, but we do have somebody who knows all about that money, all about these finances. So I'm looking forward to the conversation.
I am exactly as well. Yes, we got you might have an idea of who we have on tonight, but it's always it's good to have him back.
We'll I mean, they could probably read the header right now.
I know, yeah. We always get so covert and clandestine with our guests and like read the fucking screen. One guy whose name you don't see on the screen is Stephen Aloysius Willie, who decided to take his vacation fucking 8 days into the year. No, I'm just kidding. Steve is away with his family. He well deserved. And yes. The conscience will be back we'll be back in 2 weeks on our next show.
I talked to Steve today. Apparently, since this is episode 164, he was going on a pilgrimage to Minnesota to honor Randall McDaniel.
Oh, well, there you go. Randall McDaniel. Exactly. Yes, it is episode. Thank you, Brother Nate. I was so excited I forgot to give the episode number. It is 164. Again, we're in some weird numbers. I feel like there is a well-known 64 in football, though, besides Randall McDaniel.
Yes, there's a couple old, like, black-white, played with leather helmets type of guys that are in this category.
Goldberg when he played for the Atlanta. Oh no, sorry, not that old. Jim Burt for all you New York Football Giants fans. Jim Burt, yep. 64.
Staying in New York, we got Y.A. Tittle.
Uh huh. Yes. Yes.
We and did. Who apparently wore 64. I didn't know. I couldn't have told you before this week.
Yeah, I know he wore a few times. I know he mostly wore 14, but he did wear 64 when he was an end at times. So, you know, back in those days, you could just switch each other's sweaters out. I know Steve Willie will give us a Chicago Blackhawk that I'm not remembering in 2 weeks. But yep.
And I guess maybe yeah, the 64, even though I prefer Randall McDaniel, would have to be probably George Blanda.
Yep.
Yep. Nobody on this show and nobody listening to this show watch George Blanda.
No, probably not. But
we don't get those. We don't get the raw demographic, Scotty. We can't cater that 50+ crowd.
Exactly. Anyway, this is episode 164 of the main event. Yes, the first one of the new year, and I am excited, and Nathaniel is excited because we haven't had this guy on since Valentine's Day of 2019, back when there were still crowds in arenas. Drew McIntyre was, I think, still an Impact. No, he wasn't an Impact. Maybe he was in AE. Was he in WWE by then? 2019? Yeah, he probably was. Kevin Owens was not Universal Champion. WWE had no competition, and Impact was still owned by the Carters. So, but it is an honor to have this gentleman back. He is our fiscal expert. I mean, Nate, for you, this guy goes back to clotheslines and headlines.
Yep.
I mean, this guy's old school.
Yeah, that's why I was so disappointed the way he ghosted us on Valentine's Day 2 years ago. Thought we had more love than that.
But he is here tonight. He does he and Mookie Ghana do the great WrestleNomics pod. And yes, he is with us tonight. And I'm gonna give all of his names. He's got 8 million, so I'm gonna give them all in a row. He is my lovey, Brandon Thurston Howard IV. Brandon, yes. Welcome back, brother.
It's great to be back. It time just goes by so fast now that I'm so old. And, it doesn't feel like 2 years, but I guess it has been 2 years. And in fact, in early 2019, I think AEW had just launched, had never run a show yet. And actually, Mookie doesn't do well. On occasion, he pops in. I had an interview with him a couple weeks ago, but I do it all by myself now, WrestleNomics. Mookie has been recruited and he has jump shipped to All Elite Wrestling himself. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, I didn't want to. Damn it. I was trying to no sell it, and son of a bitch.
We wished him well in his future endeavors.
You endeavored him.
He requested his release numerous times, and we even pushed his contract ahead because of some time off that he took earlier. Mm-hmm. But eventually, we could not hang on to the non-compete any longer, so we let him go with Tony Khan.
You can't beat Florida, man. No state taxes. Come on.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, AEW was just created on paper when you were last on with us. Right. Obviously, Dynamite didn't happen till October, and it was still 4.5 months before the first Double or Nothing. But WWE was still the flamethrower. Well, they still are the flamethrower, let's be honest. Making big money. But in 2020, nobody made big money. And obviously the biggest problem was no tickets. Here on the main event, Brandon, we talk about the big six, the six pack of North American. We always talk about WWE, AEW, Impact, NWA, New Japan, even though they're not North American. Totally, they kind of count. And Ring of Honor. Mm-hmm. Obviously, each company had their own set of problems in 2020. And each one had their own set of good tidings or good luck, if you will, due to what maybe happened. You know, a couple of companies may have found a silver lining during the dark cloud. What were your general thoughts before we really dive into the meat and potatoes? What were your general thoughts on 2020 as a year in wrestling, as unique as it was? A couple things in general that you gathered from the year in wrestling.
Well, I think what the COVID year of 2020 really highlights in wrestling is just how much for the biggest companies, for especially maybe those six or seven companies that you just mentioned, that pro wrestling is now a media business and not so much a live event business. Obviously, you need to put on an event to have matches and to create content, but you don't really need to sell live tickets to be a profitable business. WWE in the year of 2020 they're going to report in probably early February that they're going to have their most profitable year ever, even adjusted for inflation, more profitable than the best year of the Attitude Era is 2020 for them. They're going to have about $1 billion in revenue. And I forget what I've estimated now for net income, but they're going to have, I think, over $100 million in net income, which is just a measure of profit. So it's this business is not so much about, you know, putting on a TV show that promotes tickets or even pay-per-views. Well, I mean, pay-per-view is still a valuable product, but the vast majority of the money for WWE, well, the slight majority of the money for WWE, and probably the overwhelming majority, at least in 2020 for AEW, came from TV money, came from just the money that they got compensated for putting on their weekly program. So when I grew up here in Buffalo, and I used to watch WWF Superstars on my local Fox affiliate, and that was paid programming. That was basically an infomercial. I know they probably had ad time on it. Maybe they were selling it, but it was basically an infomercial to promote tickets and the quarterly pay-per-views and maybe some merchandise. You could think of it as and call it a destination business. You put on this TV show and it promoted a product that you were supposed to buy later. And it's almost like the business has been turned on its head now, where they get all their money from business partners, from TV networks. And this year they didn't, you know, there wasn't a ticket sold, at least in WWE since March. AEW's done some limited ticket sales at Daly's Place. But and they still AEW did pay-per-views, and WWE obviously did pay-per-views on the WWE network. But so much of the money comes from TV now. It's really just changed the model compared to what we, you know, in previous eras. And when we take historical assessments of the business, it's not so much about selling tickets anymore. And that's never been more clear than in a year where there was a pandemic and nobody could really sell that many tickets.
Mm. Well, let's stay with AEW here for a second, Brandon, because I think they were one of the big stories in 2020, you know, that first full year of Dynamite on TNT. And I'm wondering what you've made of, like, the company so far, but also, you know, from a financial standpoint and their partnership with TNT and what I feel was a very fortuitous move, which was, you know, re-upping right before everything really got shut down by the pandemic. So what are kind of some of your general thoughts on AEW's performance so far?
Well, I think so their partner's TNT, which is, I guess it's Turner. I'm not really sure what the structure is, but obviously there's TNT, there's Turner, and then they're ultimately owned by Warner Media, which is ultimately owned by AT&T.
AT&T. It's one big pyramid scheme, brother.
It really is. Yeah, yeah. All we need is the Tupperware.
Yeah. Right. So, as you mentioned, Nate, they got re-upped at the beginning of 2020 because apparently TNT or Turner was happy enough with the ratings that they were getting at that time that they were ready to make a longer commitment. And they're committed, I believe, through the end of 2023 with an option to continue that for an additional year on top of that, which would be through the end of 2024. They've done well. I think one of the big patterns that we've seen, one of the big stories that we've seen out of 2020 is that everybody suffered at the beginning of the pandemic in terms of viewership. Everybody's ratings went down. I think there was some curiosity at first about, like, you know, what is no fans wrestling going to look like? But then through April, everybody's ratings suffered. And then they started to bounce back through the summer for NXT and AEW, but not for Raw and SmackDown. Raw and SmackDown continued to decline through the summer until about late August, when in late July, Vince got grilled on the earnings call at that time by a number of stock analysts. And about a week or so later, they announced that they were coming out with the Thunderdome. And the Thunderdome, this is supposed to be a response about AEW, though, right? but the Thunderdome really stopped the ratings decline. And the return of Roman Reigns helps. But I think AEW and NXT have shown, this is kind of the way that I felt about it at the beginning. So I don't know, maybe I'm just reinforcing my own narrative to myself. But I really feel that you've got four major programs on TV, if you don't count Impact. And Raw and SmackDown are booked by Vince McMahon, to use the old term, booked. And NXT is booked by Triple H. And AEW is booked by Tony Khan. And I think I think Triple H and Tony Khan are at least far better bookers than Vince McMahon is. And now everybody's kind of got an equal distribution platform or equal ability to reach people, at least in the United States, because they're all on, they're on major cable networks that are in about, I don't know, 85 million homes. TNT and USA are on equal platforms. Fox, of course, is in quite a few more homes than any of them, because just about anybody with a TV can pick up Fox. But no, I think AEW has done well. This is something far different than we've ever seen in this sort of post WCW era of US wrestling, where, you know, this isn't TNA, this isn't Impact. And we're in a different media environment where the internet means more and people can find out about you more easily than when, I guess, TNA was on its come up, which I see their peak as being about 2010, which is not quite in the smartphone social media era as we know it today.
So nobody had their H phone.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Terry wasn't out there with his H phone yet. You know, tell him the marks about how, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, yeah. Why do the young guys, why do they spurn me? because his fellow old guys told them how you were when you were their age. We're going to do a little game later on, Brandon. We're going to do thumbs up, thumbs down on some certain things. And you bringing up Triple H is one of the things I wanted to talk about later. TV is big. You're definitely right about that. But let me transition into streaming for a minute, because not only WWE Network still does fine. Obviously, WWE Network is more for the old, you know, the old timers like myself. And, you know, I still watch the current product, but, you know, I like watching my old stuff every day in the morning. It gets me into the day. I actually watched a pretty badass episode of SmackDown from April of 2000, which was pretty good. But I feel like in 2020, streaming definitely was on the rise, because not only at WWE Network, yet Impact Plus, even though they're a goddamn mess. I'll tell you that inside joke in a minute, Brandon. But and then, of course, New Japan World. How do you think streaming played as a wild card in terms of content in 2020?
I think W Network was slightly helped by, I think people have just embraced streaming. Like, I think the average consumer is embracing streaming in the time of COVID, where more people are working from home. So what we saw in 2019 was on a year-over-year basis for each quarter, because you have to look at the W Network subscribers by right. quarter, compared to the same quarter of the prior year. Because of WrestleMania, it makes things seasonal. And what we saw throughout 2019 is that in all those comparisons, 2019, the subs were down in each quarter. And we've seen since WrestleMania this year, which is just one quarter, I guess. So in Q2, the end period subs were slightly up, but the average period subs were slightly down. And then in Q3, we actually saw a slight increase in the Q3 of this year versus the Q3 of 2019. When I say this year, I meant 2020. Anyway, the decline in W Network subscribers seems to have stopped. And I think that's just a part of it is that people are embracing streaming more, and it helped their subscriber base. I don't think there's anything that's really changed in the product that tells me like, oh yeah, they're doing X, Y, and Z, and that's why they're more popular. I think we saw a number of W's popularity metrics on decline on an annual basis for a number of years from about 2017 on. But New Japan World, which seems to be, I mean, we don't really get numbers about that. Bushiroad just continues to report that in a very vague and round number kind of way, just says that NJPW World has about 100,000 subscribers. So right. they're not, what I read that as, it's not moving very much, or it's not dramatically above or below 100,000. I think there's some teasing on the Wrestle Kingdom show about a TV deal or some sort of deal to get their product back in front of English speaking fans, since they lost access at the end of 2019. If I were to guess, I think that means a service like the Roku channel. Because I think it's really important to New Japan that they get on a service that a lot of people can access, as opposed to a service, maybe even take the channel Access TV, which is only in about half of the cable homes, which would mean, I don't know, somewhere around 40 million homes, which is what they were on before. But I would I was just seeing something earlier today about how Roku is in something like 60 million. There's 60 million active users. Maybe that's worldwide. But anyway, Roku is it's available in the US. It's available in the UK. It's available in Canada. Those would be all of their major Western markets that they would want to appeal to.
Now, Brandon, we talked about, you know, kind of our six-pack a little bit, but let's kind of broaden the tent, because this past week on the Kings of Sport, Marcus and I, we sat down with TJ McClune, who I'm sure is familiar to some listeners of this program, but he's also booked some shows out in Texas. And he was kind of telling me about the struggles that have gone on in the independent scene because of everything circling COVID. You talked about how, you know, the WWE actually made money this year, how AEW's in a solid financial state. But what about the independent scene? Like, do you think that 2020 was something that has seriously damaged the indies going forward, or is this something that folks can bounce back from?
I don't know if COVID has hurt it. I mean, obviously, COVID has cut out all indie shows. I haven't wrestled since early March or maybe late February of 2020. I think what's hurt independent wrestling a lot is that there's an enormous competition for talent, and that's leaving less of the marquee talent out there available to book. And compound that with Speaking Out movement exposing a number of independent wrestlers as, you know, people who you can no longer book anymore.
Yep.
So I don't know. I'm 35 years old, and I don't feel that bad about missing a whole bunch of time in wrestling. But I know, you know, we have our school in Buffalo, and I feel really bad for a lot of our younger people who, you know, were really picking up momentum on the indies and traveling a lot and starting to get their names out. And they're missing, you know, an entire year of active, you know, independent wrestling time. There's still some shows happening here and there in front of really limited crowds. But I think when it comes to indie wrestling, like, I think there's two totally different paths to go in terms of being an indie promotion. Like, there's being a local promotion where you use talent that's a lot of local talent that doesn't cost you a lot. They're maybe making $20 for a match, and you just sell tickets and you rely on the talent to get tickets out to their friends and family members, and that's a very safe way financially to run a show. And then there's the other promotions that I think, you know, sort of internet wrestling fans, if you will, are more familiar with, and that's what I would call the super indie model, where you try to book, you know, the best wrestlers who are available, and you sell a video product, and maybe you also obviously sell tickets too, and maybe even want people to, you know, drive in or travel in long distances to attend your show. But the point is that you create a very attractive, or you try to create a very attractive video product that you can then market and sell to people around the world. And I think that's that latter super indie model is the one that's really, I think, they're really going to be challenged to create new stars whenever, you know, COVID's all over and everybody's all vaccinated or whatever, and we're able to do normal live events. Hopefully that's sometime in the second half of 2021. Especially having to sit this year dormant without being able to create any new indie stars, and everybody's getting signed up because there's enormous competition between WWE, AEW, Impact, New Japan, et cetera, to collect all the best possible wrestlers that there are. And, you know, it's different than it was, I think, pre-2014, where WWE was out there, and TNA was, you know, going after talent as well, but there wasn't the fierce competition and there wasn't the valuing of the talent that was on the indies. And I really think the talent pre-2014 or so on the indies was really undervalued by the bigger companies, and they have gradually awoken to the talent that is out there now. But that said, I think there's a lot of indie promotions in this sort of second half of the 2010s era that have built up a lot of valuable brand recognition and name ID among internet wrestling fans. And I think even though the same talent that is available now is not the same talent that was available, you know, even 3 years ago, these indie promotions still have some credibility, and they still have some social media awareness, and they still have, they have those things to run on whenever they come back, and to hopefully build some stars when there's live events again.
Yeah, I mean, they, you know, the indies definitely got bonked by a lack of television and a lack of exposure in the middle of the year before things were able to kind of, you know, restructure with a lack of fans. For instance, as I talk about with my partner, Dr. G, on the NWA Saturday special, I bought the 3 months of UWN Primetime Live, United Wrestling Network, which is the collective out on the West Coast with Dave Marquez. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was working with the NWA because he's close with Billy Corgan. And I saw guys, I mean, I'll admit I mostly wanted to watch NWA guys, but I saw clearly towards the end there was less and less NWA guys and mostly UWN guys, which is a collective of, like, Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, Championship Wrestling from Phoenix, and I think they have a promotion in Memphis. And
how was that stuff? Because I heard about it. In fact, what's his, the guy from who's the UPW guy who trained people and was in 01. What's his name? Shoot. Anyway, I did some help with UWN. They asked me to put together some information about the wrestling industry in general. And I didn't catch any of their shows. And I was wondering how they were.
You listen to, I mentioned on the main event with these guys, and I mentioned it on one of my other shows, the NWA Saturday special with Dr. G, and I'm a big NWA guy, and there are a few guys that stood out for me. Danny Limelight, mm-hmm. Alex Hammerstone, mm-hmm. Love him, he's awesome. He looks like Scott Steiner, except with talent and temperament. but he looks just like him. Blonde hair, big guy, but very good in the ring. overall, the matches, the men's matches were good. The women's matches weren't bad. Their promo skills are a little rough. They could probably use a little camera work. But overall, I thought the in-ring quality was fine. Here's the weird thing, and I'm curious your thoughts on this. I've talked about this with the guys. It's very hard. Tell me if you agree with me on this. It's very hard to gauge whether a match is good or not when you don't have the thermometer in the room, and the thermometer in the room is the audience. A match can look good in the ring when you've just got two guys that are you know, hitting their moves and they're doing chain sequences and things are, I guess, looking good. But isn't it hard this year to really pick – to look at a solid match when there's no audience to give you the temperature of it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. I mean, the only thing I can compare it to is training when we have people do practice matches and there's no crowd there, right, or we're trying to create an artifice of a crowd. But I've had a lot of trouble trying to watch wrestling in 2020 and obviously through the present. Like, I put it on in the background, but it's not something that I really get enthusiastic about. And I feel that I do kind of feel that, you know, oh, this isn't the real competition, whether it's the business competition or the work competition or wrestling. Like, the real competition isn't happening yet. Oh, this isn't. I mean, we kind of all felt that way, I think, at first. No, I didn't expect, you know, COVID, the pandemic, to be something that was going to last maybe more than a few weeks or maybe a few months. And then, you know, here we are in January of the following year, and it's still happening and restricting events. Mm-hmm. I figured, you know, this is going to be a temporary thing, and, you know, we'll all pick up later. And I think that reflects a lot of the behavior in the viewership. But yeah, it's the most interesting part of wrestling. And I think the most interesting part, especially of WWE, where they have such trouble controlling the crowd is the crowd. And at least from the sort of meta way that I tend to watch wrestling, I think an increasing portion of fans watch wrestling. That's the most interesting thing to watch, is that who's going to get over, you know, how are the stories going to unfold? Yeah. But how is the audience going to react to it? And in WWE's case, are they going to get the intended reactions, and what are they going to do when they don't?
Yeah, that was a good point, Scotty, that I think we talked about a lot last year. Was, yep, there were so many moments in the WWE as well as other companies that were undercut by either not having a crowd at all or having a crowd full of people on the payroll, you know, and so you know, when we have these moments, and it's, I'm going to keep going back to it, Brandon, because this was like a moment that I thought was cool, but it could have been even cooler if there were more people in the building. And that was when Sting came back, you know, a moment like that, or a moment like when Matt Hardy debuted, stuff like that. I think that, and this is a larger issue, like I'm Nino Brown in the courtroom now. Like, this is bigger than Nino Brown. This is about America. Like, this is bigger than pro wrestling, Brandon.
I love it.
This is bigger than pro wrestling. Like, this is an American thing where I feel like, yeah, everybody thought, oh, this will be done by the summertime. Like, nope. Oh, this will be done by Christmas. Nope. Calendar still flipped over. We're still here. And we're probably going to still be here, you know, at least through this summer. And so the question is, you know, in terms of the wrestling business, how do they pivot? Like, what have you seen? What changes have you seen, if any, in the wrestling industry this year, whether it's reacting to COVID or reacting to not being able to have fans or reacting to something like the speaking out movement?
Well, I think one thing that we've seen, and it's part of the reason why WWE was able to stay so profitable, is that they saved in that period where they were just running at the Performance Center before they started doing the Thunderdome, which is more expensive. When they were just running at the Performance Center, it was so much more inexpensive to produce TV for them than it was when they're traveling around from arena to arena. It's tremendously expensive to run the production quality of a TV show that WWE does or AEW does. It's hundreds of thousands of dollars at least every time they run TV. And a lot of that has to do with the setup and the teardown and all the stagehands that you have to pay to do that. But when they were at the Performance Center, they just had a fixed location and they didn't have to load anything up or load anything out. It was just there week after week. And that saved them a ton of money. And by the way, they cut a bunch of people during that time, too, and did all sorts of cost cutting just to be, I don't know, extraordinarily conservative with their finances, I guess. But so I guess that's the only thing I can think of, is that it just sort of highlights how much you can save by running television at a fixed location week after week. I don't know how that really gets applied post COVID. Like, I don't think there's going to be, I think after a few months, people will be comfortable going to live events again. And you can't run Raw at the same arena week after week. I think that market will get very tired out very quickly. So you have to continue to travel around to draw thousands of people to get a lively crowd, and there's other reasons why it's valuable to tour Raw and SmackDown or Dynamite around the country. But I think one of the things we might see after COVID is that WWE will run far fewer house shows. I'm making a big PowerPoint presentation today about that subject, which these are the kind of things that I do. So I think it's likely that WWE will run far fewer North American house shows post COVID. I think maybe they still do some international tours, which are more profitable, but I think they do far fewer North American house shows because their live event division, pre COVID, I think they had something like five out of four straight quarters where they lost money in their live events division. And the one quarter where they didn't lose money was the WrestleMania event, because WrestleMania is tremendously profitable. It's a large crowd, very high ticket prices. So they make a lot of money doing that. So I think that's what happens. I think there's pros and cons to that. I think the pros are that you get people on the road and they get lots of reps, and that's a great way to get people experienced. And I think there's a local marketing value to in traveling around the country and around the world and putting smiles on people's faces, but seriously giving people memories that they'll remember for the rest of their lives about the time that they experienced this WWE event. It gets wrestlers paid too, because wrestlers are independent contractors who get paid when they wrestle, in addition to the downside guarantees that they get. But the fact is that these house shows and running lots and lots of events doesn't make WWE any more profitable than it already is, at least at their level of popularity that they're at right now. Maybe if their company was better booked and they had better creative and they were better able to cultivate stars, maybe they would draw bigger crowds and these events would be more profitable. But that's just not the case. And there's things to gain from running fewer events too, which includes, putting people on the road so that they're not as prone to injury. The less you wrestle, the less likely you are to get hurt. I don't believe Arn Anderson's line about how the reason why people get hurt today is because they're not wrestling enough. I think Arn wrestled in a different era where things were different. And
yes,
and
yeah, but yeah, very.
But I think having people wrestle less, having them on the road less, letting them spend more time at home, will raise morale, keep people healthier, keep people healthy and able to perform at TV, which is where you make all your damn money anyway. Mm-hmm. And maybe you don't lose as much money by running all these unprofitable house shows.
Mm. And real quick, Brandon, before Scotty jumps in, because you brought up a phrase that sparked a question in my mind when you mentioned the independent contractor status. And, you know, like, full disclosure, that's the real reason Steve Willie's not here, because Scott wouldn't let Steve have a TikTok or a cameo. I don't agree with Scott's position, but hey, he's running things. So no personal cameo for Steve Willie.
Nope.
But I
asked 75% and he hung up on me. My Wi-Fi.
It's like any money you make from your personal cameo, Steve, is what we were already going to pay you. You know, that question of independent contractor status, you know, it's something that I feel like a lot of issues kind of popped up over the last year when everybody was kind of going through this crisis in the industry where, you know, one month we're talking about the speaking out movement, and then another month we're talking about, you know, racial discrimination within the business, and then we're talking about independent contractor status. Do you feel like anything will change on that front going forward, or was that just something that captured folks' attention for a news cycle and nothing concrete is going to come of it?
Well, I've heard Andrew Yang is filing to run for the mayor of New York City. So he's apparently not being nominated to be the Secretary of Labor, as he seemed to be hyping. But I think it's whatever happened with, you know, Andrew Yang made some tweets and, you know, sort of called out WWE for not treating its workers well and probably misclassifying them as independent contractors when they should be classified as employees. I'm not a lawyer and I'm not a legal expert. There seems to be a lot of complicated stuff around this. So. Mm-hmm. Like everybody knows, WWE is headquartered in Connecticut, but they are somehow a Delaware company. So they are incorporated in the state of Delaware, and a lot of major corporations do that because apparently Delaware state law is very favorable to businesses. So I don't know where if such a lawsuit were to ever happen, where somebody would sue WWE for misclassifying them as an independent contractor, I don't know if that would happen in Connecticut or if that would happen in Delaware or somewhere else. I think unionization is tied to this too, which it should make sense, right? And there's been tweets to the effect of, you know, Paige talking about learning about unionization and via Trinidad, you know, sort of calling out WWE in that way.
Yeah, was it Gabriel Carteris from SAG?
Yes, right.
That hopped up in that.
Right. Yeah. So. And again, like, I don't know that much about how a union would literally get started, but I do think this, like, wrestlers in WWE are very competitive with one another, right? And everybody's looking for an edge to get above each other, even though they are a team as well and they work together. But I think there's too much self-interest and competition for all of these people to get together and actually form a union. I think the likeliest way that the way that WWE treats and classifies its wrestlers, the likeliest way that that will change is I think if there's some sort of government investigation. And again, I don't know how tenable that would be, but I think that's the only way it happens. I don't think it happens from within. When everybody wants to be a top star and few are, The people at the top are the ones who, I guess, have the least to gain because they're the people who are being compensated and treated the best. So they have the least to gain. The people who have the most to gain, have the most to lose.
You don't want to rock the boat. Like, I don't have what I want, but I might lose what I got.
Yeah.
Right.
So I don't think it's going to happen from within. I think the likeliest thing is something like an Andrew Yang figure, you know, investigating or prosecuting the business itself. Plus, like, if you're, are you going to sue WWE? Well, WWE's got, you know, a lot of money and a lot of legal resources.
Mm-hmm.
And unless some sort of lawyer or law firm takes up some sort of, you know, pro bono or class action lawsuit, I think WWE can, you know, do a lot to just make a plaintiff bleed resources until, you know, they're sort of bled dry and it can't go much further.
Getting back to the house shows for a minute, and then I want to talk about the union thing, but I think the other reason too, Brandon, that the house show business, I don't think you'll ever see it again. WWE doesn't care. Like, obviously, you know, creative makes money. Obviously, there's a combination there. If you're going to put on a good show and you're going to put on some great matches and you're going to advance storylines and title matches and things like that, you're going to get sellouts at house shows. But if you're just going to have a bunch of guys show up and do a bunch of time limit draws like they've done the last like 8 years, you're going to have failing house show gates because nobody cares. Like you mentioned ticket prices. I grew up in New Haven and I went to the Coliseum for, you know, 12 years from 1987, New Haven Coliseum from 87 to 2000. I was going to house shows for $8. So if I went to a crap house show where nobody showed up, but I only spent $8, whatever. I got to see Bam Bam Bigelow against Damian Demento or something, but I spent $8, whatever. But if I'm going to watch Bam Bam Bigelow versus Damian Demento, but I spent $50, okay, now we're talking something else. And that's what it comes down to. You know, we haven't had a house show title change since
AJ Styles beat somebody.
Yeah. AJ beat Kevin Owens at the Garden for the U.S. title. You know, and before that, there were tag title changes overseas. Christian and Booker had a IC title swap in 2003. Other than that, like, you're never going to see the world title change hands at a house show in Omaha, Nebraska. So WWE creatively gave up on house shows. So why are we caring whether there's, you know, why should they even bother? I think that's what it comes down to. And I don't think you're going to see AEW tour the country even when things open up again. I think they like their little Jacksonville enclave, and I think they're happy. I mean, they'll bounce around Dynamite again. They had good crowds for their Dynamites in certain cities, but I don't know if they'll see a house show thing.
It's not cost effective, I think, for them to run house shows unless they get incredibly more popular than they are now. I don't think they look at a strategy of running house shows as something that they can do profitably. So they're not going to do it. And I think WWE's approach to house shows, you know, it's a relic from the past. If you were just inventing wrestling today, you would never run house shows the way that they run house shows. The way that they run house shows are a relic from from a pre-internet era where nobody's aware of what's happening on this show, so we can do whatever we want. We can repeat matches and repeat finishes, and it's all in this isolated universe. And that's just not the reality in the media world that we live in, where, you know, people have smartphones and can record anything, and obviously the results get reported on the internet if you look them up. So yeah, they've made them inconsequential, and I think, more so each year than the year before. Fans understand how inconsequential house shows are, and they're able to distinguish what a house show is from what a TV taping is, and they know that house shows don't matter. So they've diminished in value because of the awareness of the fans and because of the company's, you know, inability to figure out or execute an alternate strategy that makes them more valuable.
Right. Exactly. Yeah,
like just talking about like here, Scotty, in Virginia, like in Hampton Roads, they do two shows a year. One's a house show and one's TV. So they alternate. So if the house show this year's in Norfolk, then TV's in Hampton and vice versa. And it's like if I'm taking like me and my buddy and his son are going to this show, like you said, like the house show is $40. TV's 60. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, there's no choice right there. Like, yeah, I can go to this house show with my buddy and his kid where nothing consequential happens, or I could pay an extra $20 and maybe something cool happens on TV. So yeah, there's no incentive, I don't think, to the audience, like, to, you know, especially when you're talking about that price point. It's something we've talked about with AEW pay-per-views. Like, I feel like fans are willing to pay up to a certain amount. And when they feel that they're not getting their value, particularly now when you got a lot of people out of work, when you got a lot of people who are on unemployment, like the amount that they're willing to go above and beyond to support a product is not where it was in the 80s or in the 90s or in the early 2000s. So, yeah, I feel like house shows, they are something that can be productive, as Brandon was saying, but you've got to reevaluate what the purpose of the house show is. Is it to make money, or is it to, you know, promote goodwill and give your crew some reps on the road?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And again, I mean, you're not going to pay, like, I would pay the same price for a Raw or a SmackDown, or, well, maybe not an NXT because it's at Full Sail, but you would probably pay for a Raw or a SmackDown that price. But I'm not paying $50 for a house show so I could watch a bunch of, you know, draws. But if they, I mean, now if they change the culture and suddenly, you know, Roman Reigns gets upset by, you know, Kevin Owens for the Universal title in, I don't know, the Scope in Norfolk. Well, shit, if they're going to start doing stuff at house shows, well, but that's not, we all know that's not going to happen. So,
and or give it to NXT, like, because I'd pay for an NXT show.
Yeah, I would absolutely too. I never got to see an NXT house show. I got to see a takeover in Bridgeport, which is about 30 minutes north of me. So that was awesome. As for unions, and first off, if I'm going to take advice on wrestling business practices, I'll get it from Valerie Malone and not Andrea Zuckerman. All right. I have my priorities, guys. Really. Go away, Andrea. I'll take it from Valerie. Definitely. but I mean, we saw this in the past. You know, Jesse the Body wanted a union, but Nate's favorite wrestler, Terry, kind of put that in the quash because he had nothing to gain. Now, back then, the difference back then was all those guys were getting paid well, and they were all so coked up and everything else that they weren't paying attention to whether their lives sucked or not, because they were either popping pills, doing lines, or drinking. The wrestling business now is much more aware, obviously. And it does come down to, will the Roman Reigns and the Drew McIntyres cave for the sake of the Apollo Crews and the, you know, and the another, mid-card guys, or the NXT guys, like that kind of thing, you know, or the what's his name? I'm brain farting. Damn it. You know, guys like that. Are they, you know, they're the ones that are gained from it. I can't think of, he just was the U.S., the Intercontinental, Sami Zayn.
Oh, Sami.
Yeah, somebody like a Sami Zayn, you know, he'll gain from a union situation. But a guy like Roman, or a guy like Drew McIntyre, or a guy like, plus, you know, union guys can bitch when, and make a point in a union situation when a Goldberg comes in and gets, you know, $450,000 to wrestle once. Or Brock Lesnar, forget that. I would lose my fucking mind if that asshole came in and made $750,000 to do a match when all these other guys are scraping. Those are the situations that piss me off. But that's just me hating Brock Lesnar as he can attest to. But does a lot of it have to do? And you know what? I got a fun little thumbs up, thumbs down game for you, Brandon, and for you and I, Nate, because I got like individual things, like questions that could happen in 2021, and you know what? Why don't we do it now? Because one of them, a lot of them are going to be very deep questions. So here's question number one. And obviously, Nate, I want your opinion as well. Number one, by the end of 2021, Triple H will be the boss of WWE.
Who's going first?
You can guess first.
You first.
Okay.
And I'm not talking about like, you don't have to clarify. The reason I was very vague about that, we don't want Vince to die, I mean, or anything. But I mean, like, if the situation arose where Vince was not the head of the table anymore, and Triple H is the man.
Are we talking by boss? Do you mean head of creative or CEO?
The man. The head of the snake. Top of the food chain. So, well, I guess you could say head of creative to a certain extent. Yeah. So I guess it's a hard question because.
So I guess, well, so Triple H will never be CEO of WWE. No, I mean, like the only way that happens, the only way Triple H becomes head of creative is if Vince dies this year. And I don't think Vince is going to die this year. So no.
Yeah, I would agree. Like, I think to answer both of your questions in that question, Scotty, if something happened to Vince this year, Triple H, I think, would be head of creative. But if anybody's going to be the CEO, it's going to be Stephanie, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. I mean, if not to get sidetracked, but I think if there's even a possibility that I think there's some sort of interim or, you know, middle figure who could be, you know, somebody off of the board of directors could be CEO for a while before. I think there's a good possibility that Stephanie will be CEO of WWE.
Yeah.
Today,
but Shane. I think
I think Shane's been pushed out. I think that I'd be really interested to know what the backstory is of the family drama. But I think Shane's at least not close to being a major officer in the company again.
Yeah, like Stephanie feels more corporate than Shane, and even more so than Hunter. Like, I feel like Hunter would be great for creative, but like, honestly, I don't know if he's the business guy.
No, he's definitely not. Stephanie could. I mean, and when you listen to these earnings calls, in this most recent earnings call, Stephanie had a more prominent role. She was introduced at the beginning of the call for the first time ever. She spoke more than she ever has before. In the past, she's only like been thrown to answer an offhanded question. So I think that, you know, she was really elevated on the most recent call, which was on Halloween, I think. So I think that's not by mistake. I think that's just to sort of gradually elevate her to the corporate view, to investors, to stock analysts and things like that. Yeah. You know, and I think it's been a gradual process and that'll continue over time.
Yeah, because if Vince has some say in it, he's going to want to keep it in the family. Like, I don't see him wanting to give those reins up to somebody who's not of his genetic gene pool.
Right. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
The reason I ask that is because I wonder if, you know, because Vince wanted, as much as Vince didn't want to be like his dad, and he, I don't want to say it's a hypocrisy. I think it's just the way you think when you get older. You know, Vince all these years bitched and moaned. He didn't want to be like Vern Gagne. He didn't want to be like Bill Watts. He didn't want to be like Fritz Von Erich. He didn't want to be like, you know, Don Owen or the Roy Shire or Paul Bosch was actually pretty respectable. Jim Barnett and the crowd. You know, he wanted to be this revolutionary, fresh, new guy. And now it's 2021, and he's the Vern Gagne. He's the, you know, he's the grizzled guy who likes the way things have always worked. Yeah. So I always thought that maybe if there was a change at the top, if maybe his other relatives, his children would think differently and maybe think about just making them employees and not being contractors anymore. You know what I mean? They're still paying them. They still pay them. They still pay for their medical. I mean, you know, I'm sure that when Triple H got his quad fixed, or when guys got their necks done by Dr. Andrews, that those guys weren't paying. I'm sorry, that wasn't happening.
They pay
for all those.
Yeah, they pay for injuries, and I think they pay for surgeries that are a result of, you know, doing things in the ring for WWE.
Right.
You know. They don't pay for your health insurance though. You are required to carry health insurance. They do not provide it for you. You have to get that yourself and pay for that yourself.
Yeah, that's not cheap too for them. You know.
Yeah, yeah. If you get hurt at home, you know, climbing a ladder to get on your roof, they're not paying for that.
Right. Yeah. No. There's definitely things about that that need to be fixed in the future. I agree with you 100% on that. All right. So, thumbs up or thumbs down? Then this is kind of the opposite. Does the family sell WWE by the end of 2021? So here's the opposite.
No, because it's related to the first question. Vince is going to be alive throughout 2021, and Vince will never sell in his lifetime.
But that's funny you say that. See, the first question, I know, Nate, I'm like, that's a dumb question. But think about this, though, because it seemed like it was mildly rumbling in 2020, even into as back as 2019, that
I don't think it was mildly. I think there were questions from stock analysts who are just trying to understand and speculate on the value of WWE. There are, you know, and mergers and acquisitions are happening all over the business world. We were just, you know, we glanced past it earlier. We were talking about how AT&T owns Warner Media, owns Turner, owns TNT. So mergers and acquisitions are something that, you know, stock people are always thinking about, and I think it's a natural question to ask WWE. I think it would be smart for NBC Universal. I think NBC Universal should want to own WWE. Mm. I think that would be the best thing for all people involved. But that right. will never happen in Vince's lifetime, because that would mean giving up too much control.
Yep. Yeah, I agree, Scotty. Like, I think that if it were going to happen to anybody, it would be like the Universal family, but it won't. It's not going to happen while Vince is alive and well. So,
right. Yeah. Number three, will Vince get assassinated? No, I'm only kidding.
I'm noticing a pattern.
Yeah. Will there be a mysterious pedigree on the deck? No. Number three, thumbs up or thumbs down? Raw will go back to 2 hours.
Thumbs down. No. They make too much money by having Raw be 3 hours. I think everybody realizes, well, number one, everybody realizes that 3 hours is detrimental to the program in terms yep. of retaining viewers across the duration of the program.
And Triple H just said that. Triple H just said that. He said it on Steve Austin's podcast. He was in control, and he said this. If he was the boss, Raw would go back to 2 hours. He said it.
Right.
Yeah.
So WWE gets an in their current deal, just in the U.S., they get an average annual value for Raw, $265 million per year. And you can divide that by 52 to figure out what that comes out to per episode. And if they run a two-hour Raw instead of a three-hour Raw, well, you can cut that by 33% in terms of the amount of money that they would get. I mean, to actually turn Raw into a two-hour program, they would have to renegotiate, I would imagine, all their existing TV deals, which would mean less money, which would mean the stock price would fall, and that's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I feel like this bomb you threw in the middle of the room, Scotty, like it's still smoking. the only way this happens is if like the contract runs out and Vince is no longer there to negotiate the deal, and Triple H is there to negotiate the deal. Because it wouldn't make sense financially to do it. From a creative standpoint, it makes complete sense. But unless USA was unhappy, like, and the only way I could see USA being unhappy is if the Raw numbers fell to like NXT numbers or something like that, which is not going to happen.
Yeah, I think there's an economic argument to make to say, look. You know, Raw has had some challenges with the ratings. We're not happy with the way our viewership is and our fan base is. And one of the ways we're going to address that is by making this program shorter. It's going to cost us money in the short term, but it's really going to benefit this company in the long term, because it's going to help us out creatively. It's going to help us attract and maintain fans. I think there's an argument to be made there. And maybe I would even, you know, support that argument, but as far as is it going to happen or not, no.
Okay. You're 0-3, Scotty.
All righty. Question four. Fox will want SmackDown to go to 4 hours. No, I'm only kidding. all right. Let's leave WWE then, because I'm batting zero. But I'm not rooting for thumbs up. So I'm just asking the questions. I'm not saying, you know, I don't want Vince to live till he's 112, but, you know.
Vince would outlive us all.
Yeah, sadly.
His mom is still alive, to give you a forecast.
Yep.
She's in her 90s or something, yeah.
And if Vince Sr. Didn't smoke 50 packs a day back in the day, he'd probably still be alive too.
If he was all hopped up on growth hormone and energy drinks, he'd be okay.
Oh, Vince Sr.? Yeah, of course. Yeah. If Vince Sr. got thrown off a cell by Steve Austin, or by Bruno, imagine a Bruno-Vince Sr. feud. How cool would that be? Bruno shoving Muhammad Ali as he's the referee for Showdown at Shea against Larry Zbysko. No. That would be awesome, actually. All right. Question four. Thumbs up or thumbs down? AEW will have a second show in primetime.
Thumbs up. I think Tony Khan has said as much that, first of all, the deal that they have with WarnerMedia is for 3 hours of weekly programming. Not just two. And it's not to make AEW Dynamite 3 hours. That's not going to happen. But they are going to provide an extra program. I guess I'm gambling a little bit by saying it'll be in, by, you know, agreeing, you know, with the question that it'll be in prime time. I'm not so sure about that, but there will definitely be another 1 hour program somewhere in the Turner TV world.
Yeah, I guess I'm thumbs in the middle then, because I agree that there will be a show, and it makes sense both financially and creatively to have another show. But I don't know if it's going to be prime time. I'm thinking maybe a weekend show, and I don't know where on the TNT schedule they would plug that in. But I do think, yeah, they will expand to another show, because it, like we've already seen with Dynamite, I feel like Dynamite has the opposite problem of Raw, where with Raw, it feels like they're stretching the ingredients. You know, they only bought enough ingredients to make two pies, and they're making three pies. Dynamite, they're giving you three pies worth of ingredients in two pies, and I feel like they need to spread that out a little bit.
Yeah. If I were betting, I would look at, you know, remember when AEW and NXT were preempted in the summer, and they were not running head-to-head because of, you know, sports, in AEW's case, it was because of NBA playoff games, I think. And what were the nights that they ran on alternatively? And I think the first rescheduling was to Saturday at 6 p.m.
Yep.
And I would think that's, I mean, I don't know if it's on TBS or TNT, but I would think that's the likeliest.
They did a pretty decent number that night too.
Right. Yeah. They've done well in all of their preemptions. Yeah. And granted, they're not going head to head with an NXT on USA. Although that episode was opposed by an NXT takeover on the network. But yeah, I think that's the likeliest landing spot, is either TNT or TBS at 6 o'clock, maybe even 6:05 p.m. We'll see.
Mm. Okay.
Knowing how much of a high key WCW mark everybody involved is in, Saturday at 6:05 would not shock me in the slightest.
Yeah, and I think
and that's why, and they end up. Oh yeah,
and I think Tony Khan wants to make it like a developmental type of program in terms of, like, this is sort of our minor league, because I think they are challenged in the sense that they don't have a developmental brand like WWE does. And you've got to start working on a lower tier of talent, I guess, that can eventually sort of graduate or be introduced before they make it to Dynamite or something like that.
Number five. Vince Sr. will come back from the dead and buy WWE and flip the quarter on his son. He was not dead. It's kind of like Katie Vick. Now, all right. Now, this is a good one. This is a good one. Number five. Tony Khan will buy either the NWA, Impact, or Ring of Honor. We'll buy one of the three lower levels. Okay.
No, I think, what do they gain by doing that? And what do they gain in terms of what they have to trade to gain that? I think the greatest thing that they have to gain, I guess, are some talent rights in terms of talent contracts and a video library, which they do lack a video library just by the nature of, this is a company that's only existed for about 2 years now. But I don't think there's a ton of value to gain for them by acquiring any assets. I guess maybe if one of them go out of business, but I don't see that happening either, because Ring of Honor and Impact, at least those two, are owned by large parent companies that want content. And even if the, you know, Impact and Ring of Honor aren't profitable operations, I don't know if they are or not, but even if they're not, they're still providing content and that's really valuable for these companies in the media environment that we're in. So I just don't see much for AEW to gain there, and I don't see much for the parent companies to gain by offloading.
Yeah, I hate to keep the theme going, Scotty, but I agree with Brandon. I feel like the only positive would be gaining that de facto developmental territory that Brandon talked about. If you had Impact or ROH or NWA, out of the three, I think the most likely would be the NWA, because you're talking about one dude as opposed to, you know, Anthem Sports or Sinclair. You're just talking about Billy when you talk about the NWA. And they've also got like a bit of a relationship in terms of, you know, Thunder Rosa and Serena Deeb and some of that talent coming over to AEW. But I don't like unless Billy gets bored, which could happen. I don't see that happening.
Yeah, like if you buy the NWA, what are you? I mean, like we said this at the beginning when Billy Corgan acquired the NWA. But like, what are you buying? You're buying a brand. There's some value there. Maybe tens of thousands of dollars in value there. But it hasn't enhanced in value since Corgan's owned it.
Yeah, but I think Billy's going to keep it. I was just curious because I think he's going to keep it. And Nick Aldis has said in interviews that NWA Power is coming back. So the NWA, I think, will come back. I just they're the ones hit the hardest by COVID, in my opinion, because and I watch plenty of Power. We do recaps here on the network. They were the ones I think hit most hard by a lack of an audience because that talent thrived on the small audience, and when you can't have small crowds, you were kind of porked. So
well, I think what's hurt NWA even worse is that they've lost Dave Lagana to speaking out. Allegations, yep. And I think they would probably be doing something by now if not for that, because it's not, I mean, that's another example of like you can run TV pretty cheaply, especially if you only have to do it in a studio at a fixed location. You're taping numerous hours, you know, in a week or something like that, so it's not too expensive relative to other ways to produce wrestling TV content. And I think that's where they are. They just don't have a producer booker,
right? And that was a weird thing, like the Me Too thing. Before I get back to the questions, that we talked about this briefly, Nate mentioned it earlier. The Me Too thing seemed to be like a flash, like it showed up. We had a zillion accusations, and then they all, and then it ended. Nothing came of them. They were accused, and then we heard nothing. Now most of them were on the other side of the pond. That British wrestling culture is just dreadful.
And Marty Scurll just parted ways with Ring of Honor the other day.
Yeah, and yeah,
that was weird, because that like you would have thought that would have happened earlier if it was going to happen.
Right, and Marty was set for a huge 2020. He was in the main event of the Crockett Cup in April. I think he was slated to beat Nick Aldis for the World Heavyweight Championship. So I think Marty was in for a big year, and then he's not. You know, that kind of fell by the... But things like Dave Lagana, like this, I think her name was Liz Savage. I think that's what her name was. She came out with the story, and then we heard nothing after that. And then Dave resigned, and that was it. So I don't know. It just felt like people said things, the whole Velveteen Dream thing. Like, I don't know what happened there. Like people came out, women came out, made accusations, and then we heard nothing after that. Did you find that odd? Like, the stories didn't continue, and we didn't get, like, a lot of big-time fire. I mean, Dave Lagana was probably the most well-known employment, what's the word I'm thinking of? Loss. But do we think we see more of that in 2021? Of more of these stories? Or do you think the wrestling culture has been as cleaned up as it's going to be?
Well, I don't know. I would be surprised if there's another, you know, condensed in time purging like there was in, I think that was June.
Yeah, it was in the summer.
It was June, July. Yeah.
I mean, I would like to think that, you know, all the bad actors have been identified, but I that would be naive. I mean, as I think there's it's inevitable, I guess, that there will be additional bad actors that will be revealed, but probably not in the quantity and over the space of time that there was in that short period of time in the summer.
Yeah, it just is very, very, very interesting. Thumbs up or thumbs down? Lars Sullivan will be in prison. How he's not at this point, who the hell knows? But oh my God.
Thumbs down.
Because if he's not by now, he may never be.
yeah. I that literally was the first time I've thought about Lars Sullivan in months. Months.
I don't know why that came to my mind, but I know it's funny. Because he came back on TV, and then he was like you know, pretty much text fucking his yoga instructor or whatever the hell that was that he did, where he was like, hey, can I see your ass or some shit? I don't know. He did something ridiculously stupid to, I don't know if it was his trainer or something. I don't know. He said something stupid. Anyway, this was, I don't know, a couple months ago. Anyway, yeah. All right, here's a serious one. Thumbs up or thumbs down? New Japan Pro Wrestling is slated to have a show called Wrestle Dynasty in Madison Square Garden. Thumbs up or thumbs down? That show will happen in 2021, Brandon.
Thumbs down. I think there will be events, normal-ish, you know, full capacity events in the U.S. in that second half of the year. But I'm not so confident that, you know, New Japan gets its stuff together and gets to schedule Madison Square Garden in time for the new year.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm going thumbs down, too, because not only do you have to count on one government doing right, you have to count on two governments doing right in that scenario.
Right.
Not to mention we've got like a new strain in the UK, and it's made its way over here with COVID now, and you know, most of America is still not taking the vaccine yet. So I don't think we're going to get back to where we were until 2022, personally. Like, I feel like, you know, like WrestleMania might happen this year the way it's supposed to be in a scaled down version, but things aren't going to be back to quote unquote normal until next year. Cause we're not out of the woods with this yet. So as much as I'd like to say yes to this one, Scotty, that's a thumbs down for me.
Yeah.
I could see a scenario where you're able to do events in the US at full capacity, but the prevalence of COVID in the US is still high enough that there's restrictions around whether people in Japan can get to the U.S. and then get back to Japan.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
No, it's still on New Japan's schedule. They don't have a date slated. I'm sure it was probably supposed to be late March, early April, around Mania time. Mania's this year's, which is weird because Mania, this is why sadly I'm not going. Mania usually happens, for those that, I don't know if Brandon knows, obviously all of you listeners know and Nate knows, I work for CBS Sports. And WrestleMania weekend is usually the weekend of the Final Four. So Final Four weekend, believe it or not, is actually not as busy from my perspective and my job. So I'm usually able to sneak away and go to Mania weekend. This year, Mania's regionals weekend. And the volume of games is more, and it's actually a lot busier. So I'm not going. But
would you go to Tampa if you could? And attend like a outdoors Tampa Raymond James Stadium, limited capacity, maybe 5,000 people there. Let's say I'm just carving out an imaginary scenario. You have to get a COVID test in advance, and there's a lot of restrictions. Would you go?
Yeah, I might. Because okay. If I'm going to sit in a if I'm one of that 5,000 people in 85,000 seat place, I know that unless I'm with my PTB crew, the person closest to me is fucking, you know, 90 seats away. Yes.
And tickets are still like $200.
No. Unless I get to sit in a suite or in the pirate ship. No. Good point. That's a good point, Brandon. Okay. One more. It's been a great night, by the way, Brandon. You've been awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thumbs up or thumbs down? New Japan. Well, I'm kind of piggybacking what you said earlier. New Japan will debut a show either on Roku or Amazon Prime.
Thumbs up.
I like Amazon Prime even better than Roku, to be honest. That was talked about for
more reach there.
Yeah, that was talked about for. Was it Dynamite? No, it wasn't Dynamite. Maybe it was even Impact. I don't know, but there was another wrestling company last year, maybe it was even 2019, that maybe the show would go to Amazon Prime, and I'm thinking, that's interesting. It might have been New Japan, but yeah, you think that could work?
I do. I'll go and give my thumbs up on that, Brandon. Like, I feel like Roku's probably more likely, but you know, Amazon Prime would have a larger scope in terms of the people that it could reach, and it'd be a bigger boon for New Japan. I just don't know what it's going to ultimately mean, Brandon, because at the end of the day, it's going to be about translating both literally and figuratively this product to a Western audience. And will that Western audience take to the programming? So that's my bigger issue. Like, I feel like they're going to make it happen, but will the show actually connect with people?
Yeah, I think there's, if it's executed in the right way, there's a lot of potential for New Japan to continue to grow their fan base in U.S. and other Western markets. But I don't have a lot of confidence that they're going to. For one thing, the New Japan World website could be something more than just a Google Translate. I know that there is a lot of English in there, to be fair, and they've done a great job with getting English commentary on, you know, just about all their shows, even through COVID, where they've done some really amazing stuff with the remote commentary that they've done with Kevin Kelly and Chris Charlton and Rocky Romero.
Well, it's funny you say that before you go any further, Brandon. In the background, I've actually had matches from Wrestle Kingdom on just to have something on in the background while we're recording. And I keep turning my head, and Kevin, they actually are in Tokyo.
Yes, they were there in person. Correct. Yeah.
So, by the way, for those that I won't spoil it in terms of wins or losses, Okada and Will Ospreay was fucking amazing. Just saying that. Not going to tell you who wins. I don't want to spoil it. That match is fucking amazing if you have not watched. But then again, I'm, as Nate will tell you, Okada is one of my boys. So I'm always, and I have Ibushi and Naito in the background on right now. I think Amazon Prime would be a great spot for them. And Amazon right now is a little butthurt because they kind of had to cave on their whole issues with HBO Max because nobody didn't want to watch Wonder Woman 84. Not that that matters at this point, because I'm sure people might be regretting that now, depending on what they do on that movie. But you know, they were holding out HBO Max. They're still holding out on Peacock because they don't want to lose their Prime situation. They don't just want the pieces of the app pie. They still want their Prime. But
we're talking about the Fire Stick, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And but I think Amazon Prime would also be a good spot for New Japan to have a show. So,
you know, more people have Amazon Prime than own a pet in the United States.
That I'm one. I can't have a pet here, sadly. I wish I did. I love dogs, but I can't have one here where I live. Anything else, Brother Nate, before we send our good friend on his way? Anything else?
I think you passed the audition.
Yeah, I think you did. I think you've replaced Steve Willie because you're still on vacation, Brandon.
Yeah, this was your TNA gut check, and you were Samuel Shaw, so you made it.
Right. Oh my God.
Wait, I'll get you in touch with my agent. Tough enough.
BT, you have been amazing, brother. Where can everybody find you on social media?
You can find me on Twitter at Brandon Thurston. There's a WrestleNomics Twitter handle, too. If you would like a less opinionated version of the wrestling business, at WrestleNomics. I have a website where all my written stuff is at WrestleNomics.com, where there's no ads. I have a Patreon, patreon.com/WrestleNomics. And there's a WrestleNomics radio podcast that comes out every Saturday or every weekend, which you can find on any podcast app if you search for WrestleNomics.
That is fantastic. Brandon Thurston, everybody. Brandon, thank you for being able to come back again. It's been almost 2 years, and we missed you immensely. And we will definitely have you back if you'll allow, if you would like to return. We'd love
anytime.
To have you back. We'd love anytime. To have you back. Yeah, maybe we'll have you. Maybe we'll try and get you back next month in February after the end of 2020 call and see what kind of maybe see if Stephanie's at the head of the table next to Roman Reigns on the conference call and see if she's auditioning to be the boss. And as we get into the first quarter, question.
Yeah, they don't acknowledge wrestlers on the call.
That's true. That's part. Right. I know. All right. Quick question then. Last one. I just thought of it. Last one, then we'll let you go. Thumbs up or thumbs down? The WWE will have a positive first quarter.
Positive, was that like profitable?
Yeah, like that, well, they obviously will probably make a profit, but let's on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 meaning it's gonna suck, 10 means they're gonna buy AEW. No, I'm only kidding. on a scale of 1 to 10, what do you think their first quarter will be?
a five. They'll be very profitable in Q1. They'll do a relatively flat W Network paid subs number. Those are the two big things. There'll be questions or happiness about the state of the viewership at that time. There will continue to be questions. I doubt there will be a deal for pay-per-view streaming rights or some sort of streaming deal. Which is another thing to think about. Like, do pay-per-views end up on does WrestleMania end up on exclusive pay-per-view? Do some of the other pay-per-view events end up on some sort of streaming service, or even maybe a cable or broadcast channel? I don't know how that all plays out. This company will continue to do all right financially. Reading the TV viewership can sometimes be like, reading tea leaves or interpreting, some sort of religious text, because there's so many ways to read it, and there's so many ways you can mold whatever's happening into whatever narrative comforts you. So, but now this company's very healthy. I think there's serious questions about, I'm going into a tangent, but there's serious questions about, I think, this company's long-term outlook, like, not within the term of this contract, by 2024, but beyond that, I think, especially the longer that Vince remains head of creative, maybe like the 5-year or 7-year outlook, I have some serious doubts about how much longer, about the permanence of WWE being the number one wrestling brand in the U.S., say 10 years from now.
But, yeah. Hey, just you wait until that 2031 Goldberg event run.
No.
That'll put butts in seats.
WrestleMania 47, Goldberg versus Sting in an AEW versus WWE on a pole match.
With the special guest referee, Dominic Mysterio.
Mysterio and Terry Bollea. No. Brandon, it is always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us. And Happy New Year. Glad you're well up in the wonderful cold of upstate New York. Good luck with that. Yeah, and
it's hot up there, though. I mean, the way these Bills been playing, Steve.
Yeah.
I know.
Limited capacity playoff game coming up here.
Yeah.
In Orchard Park.
This will be interesting because they're doing some new COVID testing gimmick up there. So it'll be interesting to see how that works.
Yeah, I'm not getting anywhere near that. But you have to have a COVID test. You have to have a COVID test to attend the game.
Yeah, I think it's like a rapid test, and you take it, and you bring it back, and you, as long as you pass, you go. So we'll see how that works.
Apparently, you can buy the at-home tests on Amazon now. Mm. You know what? Free COVID test with every New Japan subscription on Amazon Prime. There you go. Brandon, it is a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us this week. We will talk to you down the line. Thank you.
Yeah, this is Scott, Nate, it's great to be with you guys, and thanks a lot for having me.
All right, take care, brother.
Take care, brother. Isn't it great to have him on? God, it's so great to have him back, isn't it, Brother Nate?
I mean, he is the E.F. Hutton of the professional wrestling business. When Brandon Thurston speaks, everybody listens.
You bet your ass he does. And we're definitely going to have him back on. Hopefully, we're shooting for, I know, right? When Brandon talks. And he's going to have his Josh Allen shirt going and his Stephon Diggs jersey. Stephon Diggs ended my fantasy season because he was on the other guy's team when I had a 36 point lead going into that last Monday night game or that Sunday night game with the Bills. And I think Stephon Diggs hit like for 47 points and I lost by 11. So thanks, Stephon Diggs. But big weekend in the NFL. Brandon Thurston is back here with us on Main Event, and hopefully we will talk to him sometime in early February when WWE has their conference call to like wrap up 2020 fiscally, and we'll get a little insight on that before as we head into 2021. But right now, though, we will talk about something that was still awesome. There were a lot of things that were terrible in 2020, but there were a few things that were awesome in 2020. Two of them we're going to talk about right now. First off, the Kings of Sport Patreon. No worse in 2021 than it was in 2020, Brother Nate. Kicking ass and taking names in the new year. What do we got over there, brother?
Yes, you're only getting better, Scotty. And right now, as I mentioned earlier, You can check out the latest edition of the Kings of Sport podcast featuring myself, Marcus Vandenberg, and TJ Moon, talking about college football, national championship, whenever that game gets played, as well as the NFL playoffs. And we talked a little bit about the Raw Legends Night in all glory. So you can check that. You can check out TDT Talks, which is a show that Steve and I, the latest edition that we recorded right before here, is available on Patreon right now as well. There's other shows like the Twin Twin Twin, which is our political show. We've done some MCU reviews. We've been working a little bit more in the last couple months, Scotty, doing some live video things that we've been doing. And if folks have missed us live, you can catch all of this stuff on the Patreon. So you can check that out, patreon.com/thekingsofsport. $5 gets you in the door, but if you want to pay more, if you feel extra generous with your check, we won't stop you in that money that the government sent you.
Well, you know what I did? I got my stimulus check, and you know what I did with it? I paid for a baby Simba cameo. So there you go. I paid for Marcus to do the TikTok and for baby Simba to do the cameo. So there you go. But Kings of Sport Patreon. I am a sponsor. Steve is a sponsor. It's fantastic. Unbelievable content. Keep it up. By the way, TJ McClune, brother Nate, is an alumnus of the Place to Be Wrestling Network.
Yes.
The TJ McClune show. There is some of his art on our archive at placetobe.podbean.com of the TJ McClune show. I used to goof with him. He liked when I finished, like I do a Kazuchika Okada. He liked when I used to do TJ McClune. But TJ McClune's a great guy. God, what is he? Lives in Texas, but he's a Pirates fan?
Yeah, he's a Pirates, Penguins, and Steelers. So he's a Pittsburgh guy.
He's a Pit Boy. Yeah, that's right. So I'll definitely have to check that out. I love TJ.
He is one of the few good things that we have left from the Alfred Kunawa era of the Kings of Sport, because we were introduced to TJ through Alfred.
Big Nasty. Oh, yep. My God. When are we getting that AEW run in? Oh, man. Anyway, Kings of Sport Patreon kicks ass, takes names, as it always does. $5 gets you in the door. Anything more, and you could sit with Steve and I up in the suite like Evolution while Nate is doing all of the awesome pods. Speaking of the PTB Wrestling Network, a lot of good stuff in the new year and continuing. Check out the store. Show off your favorite merch, like wearing your Place to Be Nation's main event stuff. Not the bootleg ones that have Steve's face on it, but the good one. TeePublic.com and type PTBW in the search. You can get hoodies. Hoodie weather is here. T-shirts, mugs, stickers, all sorts of great stuff. On the feed at the moment, the fifth episode of The Great Debate Wrestling Edition. Mm. Andy Atherton, joined by Matt Souza, Scott Shiflett, Logan Crosland, and Sean Kidd. The gang discusses and debates a variety of wrestling topics, so check that out. Guess what's up? The newest episode of PTB NXT. The dynamic duo of Tim, Jenny, and of course Jambalaya Jake concludes that trio. NXT episodes from June 26th, July 3rd, and July 10th of 2014. Nate, do you remember Bull Dempsey?
the Bull Dempsey era.
The Bull Dempsey experience. Wrestling with bag of Doritos. December's special Sunday series had the return of Marty Sleaze, the superstar, a good friend from PWO. Marty and Jerome from PWO concluded their five-part series, counting down their 25 best TNA Impact matches. And that episode was 5-1. Then, that was on New Year's Eve. Then this past weekend, they started their new series. Well, new series within Pro Wrestling Love. They began their countdown, Brother Nate, of the 100 greatest NWA WCW matches with 100 to 76. Yes, we'll be talking about matches very soon on the NWA WCW. In fact, Brother Nate, I'll talk about your boy Sting in a moment, because the yard gnome there, Matthew Rotella, watched a Sting match that I think might be on many people's lists. I'll mention it in a minute. Also, the men of NWA Croc and Roll, speaking of Sean Kidd, of course, he, the doctor, and Callum McDougall, and the guest, they end 2020 with a look back at the television of September 1985. And starting this month, Crock and Roll will now go twice a month instead of monthly. No, they're not going to do two separate months, and you're not going to have 2 3-hour podcasts. They're still going to do 1 month of programming, but they're – I know, right? I'll get that whole hullabaloo going. They're just going to split it into two parts. So for the month of January, they will do October of 1985. They're just going to do part one and part two, so and from here on out. So stay tuned for that in January. Please rate, review, and subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music. Just search Place to Be Wrestling Network. Check out the Place to Be Nation Pop feed. Great shows. Year in Pop, which we just recorded. Laugh in Theater, Great Debate, Diamond Conversations. It Was a Thing on TV. Piece of the Action, Making Mount Rushmore. I was just on a future episode of that. Blockbuster Rewind, and so much more. And, of course, don't forget our brother and sister feeds on the other side of the quad. Mrs. Smith and her Jenny Position. And, of course, my PIC, Mr. Azzaro, Aaron George, Chad Campbell, and the North-South Connection, Venoso, and all of the great shows on that feed. Go to the Rejuvenated Place to Be discussion group on Facebook. Go to Facebook, look up Place to Be, and request an invite. We talk about stuff every day, wrestling, sports, whatever we're in the mood for. PlacementNation.com, all the great stuff on there. And, of course, if you got gift cards from Amazon, you could buy New Japan. Oh, no, wait, not really. Wouldn't that be awesome, though? well, you could, I guess. You could buy DVDs if you want.
Technically.
I know, right? PlacementNation.com/Amazon. Buy whatever you'd like, and you don't pay extra, but a little bit of that comes back to us. So PlacementNation.com/Amazon. So, of course, we're not quite sure yet. Well, we know what it is. We haven't announced it yet, what our 2021 stretch project is. But we will soon. But of course, 2020 ended, and now the ballots have been tabulated, and starting very soon on PlaceToBeNation.com, we will unfurl the composite ballot for the 100 greatest NWA WCW matches of all time. I have a personal ballot. You'll hear me start that this weekend on the NWA Saturday special. Dr. G and I will I'll start counting that down. But Brother Nate, a match that Mr. Rotella watched today that I want your opinion on. In fact, I'll cheat. Screw it. I don't care. This is main event. We do what we want. I was going to start revealing my ballot this weekend, but screw it. We're going to do it now. One match that I think a lot of people have on their list that's actually a really good match. And if you could fire up a Fargo, North Dakota crowd, this would be the match to do it. Do you remember, Brother Nate, the match from the April 26th, 1999 episode of Nitro when Sting defended the WCW championship against Diamond Dallas Page? That's a match. Ooh. That's kind of sneaky good. And I watched, after he watched, he's like, you should watch this. And I watched it, and I forgot how good that match is.
Yeah, like it's not one that jumps off the page at you, particularly in that time period of WCW. But, yeah, like I think like Sting was still good, and Page has always been sneaky good because he got started so late. He started as like a 45-year-old rookie. I think he's had some underrated matches. Like, I think everybody immediately will go to that match he had with Goldberg, which is one of Goldberg's best WCW matches. But, like, even into 99, Page was still pretty solid in ring. And so, yeah, like, I remember that match. I don't remember all the details. But, yeah, like, Sting during that time period, like, that might have been one of his better matches in that space because they didn't know what the hell to do with Sting in those later years in WCW.
Right, exactly. And DDP had just won the world title 2 weeks before at Spring Stampede. And I have it at number 95 on my list. So it is on my list. Not the last Sting match I would have. I have a pretty good amount of Sting, Brother Nate. A pretty good amount of Sting. Would you put... I got a question for you. Somewhere on my list could be the match, the match, of course, from Bash at the Beach 96 that changed everything. Now, that match in ring is not, you know, is it barely 2 stars? Maybe it's 2.25. But for, I mean, think about who's in it. But for historical purposes, should that match be on a top 100 list?
Yeah, just pulling back the curtain like it's in mine. Just because I feel like the historical importance of the match and the emotion of the match, like it technically is nothing to write home about, but if the end goal of wrestling is to elicit a response from the viewer, then you can't do much better than that.
Right. Yeah.
Now,
no, absolutely.
I wouldn't put it in my top 25, but I think it certainly deserves a spot amongst those 100.
Oh yeah, no, it's not. No. I'm sure somebody put it in their top 25. My highest Sting match. I won't tip it. Well, my highest Sting singles match is 17. Okay. My highest Sting match at all, 3.
Interesting.
So there we go. My highest match that has Sting in it is 3. The highest singles match, 17. And let's just say it's a match you recommended, fine sir, if you know what I mean.
Interesting.
Yes. So
I mean, it should surprise no one that I have 2 Sting singles matches in my top 10.
That's okay. I have 1, 2, 3, 4. Well, I have 4 Flair matches in my top 10. So there we go.
Yeah, like there's a lot of Sting, there's a lot of Flair, and of course a lot of Ricky Steamboat in no uncertain order.
Yeah, no, I agree. There's a ton of there's definitely more Ricky Steamboat on this list than there was on my GWWE list, and I think a lot of that was just because a lot of his best matches were not televised at the time. We won't dive too much into New Japan. We know that of course Wrestle Kingdom happened. But we do want to respect spoilers. It was only this past Monday and Tuesday. So we won't go that far. I did have 2 matches on in the background while we had Brandon on, and I just would peek intermittently while we were talking. And the 2 matches that I was watching, you know, half and half, were pretty damn good. But I won't get into who won or lost. We'll stick with spoilers. It's only been 3 days, not 3 months. So I'm good with that. What kind of year, Nate, do you think New Japan's going to have?
It'll probably be a better year than 2020. But again, like when you're talking about COVID, which is not going anywhere, and when you're dealing with New Japan, and if you're talking about expanding into the West, you're talking about dealing with different countries and different governments. I think this won't be the year New Japan turns into a butterfly. This will be the year where they're a caterpillar. Like they've come out of the, actually this might be their cocoon year, because they've been a caterpillar. Now they're in the cocoon and then they become a butterfly. So this might be their cocoon year, because I think last year they had to to the new reality, and they were crawling a bit, as most people were and most companies were. But I think they figured things out to an extent. We saw, you know, with Wrestle Kingdom, I still haven't finished it, but we saw, you know, the crowd is back, and that adds something to the presentation. But I do think there'll still be some restrictions. So, like, I don't think this is going to be like this breakout year for New Japan, but I do think it'll be a better year than last year.
I agree. Sadly, I do agree with Brandon that I think that Wrestle Dynasty show at the Garden is probably not going to happen, and that sucks. I went to that, and I wish you were there, Nate, because you would have loved it. That G1 Supercard, I guess it's now going to be 2 years ago,
yes.
At MSG the night before WrestleMania, was so fucking good. And it just felt so, you know, Northeast kid like me, you know, who grew up, I mean, you grew up in the shadow of the scope. And, you know, and I grew up shadow MSG, and to go to a show like that, a show like that at the Garden, and it's not WWF or WWE, was mind blowing for me. And I watched again. I didn't like it live, but I watched it again on tape, or, you know, on, you know, down the line on streaming. And that was the ladder match with Jay Lethal, Matt Taven.
Yeah.
And, oh, crap. I knew I was going to forget the third guy. That was the third guy. Shit. I got to look. But that ladder match was so much better second time around, which is weird because usually it's the reverse. But but that ladder match, you know, because, you know, if you remember, Nate, a lot of people shit on Jay Lethal when he was ROH champion. I think that was just totally unfair because I thought he was – I've met him. He's such a nice guy. You know, I met him when he was in TNA. Was it Marty? No. It was Marty. Duh. It was Marty.
Yeah.
It was Taven, Lethal, and Marty. Duh. And of course Matt Taven won. And that Okada Jay White match, and I'm not the biggest Jay White fan, but that match was pretty damn good. And for like, I mean, think about it, and I goofed about this so much. Think about it. For like 15 seconds, standing in the ring of Madison Square Garden was Liger and Muda.
Mm.
I mean, I talked about it so often on the show. I lost my shit on that. So, I really would like to see New Japan thrive. They still got immense talent. They're still maybe wrestler for wrestler the best of the six companies still. I don't think WWE or AEW has reached the in-ring level of New Japan. But here's the thing, Nate, and I'll ask this of Steve when he's back in 2 weeks. Are these guys getting old? And as they get older, is New Japan do you think they're cultivating enough stars to keep this pace up? Because they've been red hot for the last, 8 years in-ring? Okada helps.
Yeah.
When you have that tight group of like Okada and Tanahashi and Takahashi and Ibushi and Naito, like that tight group of like fucking, you know, studs. But those guys are either going to retire or obviously the I don't know how much of the English language they know, but that obviously hurts them in other places. How do you think they'll be as we look ahead to the next couple of years with this roster that they have now?
I think they'll be fine in Japan. But the question is, you're talking about growth. You're talking about taking that next step. And to do that, you've got to come to the West. And so I feel like the thing that they don't have now, even though they've got a lot of great talent over there that they didn't have maybe 3 or 4 years ago, is, you know, you don't have AJ Styles. You don't have Kenny Omega. You don't have the Bucks. You know,
right.
Performers that, you know, a Western audience can kind of gravitate to. And so that's the question for me, Scotty, is not so much going to be the next up and coming Japanese guy, because, you know, they've got a farm system. So somebody's going to be the next guy. The question is, who's going to be that trended gaijin that can come over and not only do business in Japan, but also expand the audience and be somebody that American fans want to watch and get excited about. And so I think that's the big question, because it's not going to be anybody really associated with AEW. It's not going to be, you know, anybody associated right now with WWE, you know, or is there anybody in Impact that could go over there and make a difference right now? I don't think so. So that's going to be the big question for me, is who will be that guy that they can kind of hitch that American wagon to? Because if they want to get big over here, unfortunately, like, I'd love it, Scotty, if we could just, you know, transplant the current New Japan product onto American TV and have it be accepted and have it be successful. But that's probably not going to happen. So it's like, who's going to be the audience surrogate? Who's going to be the guy that, you know, somebody in Buffalo or somebody in Milwaukee or somebody in Omaha? You know, you mentioned Nebraska earlier. Like, who's going to be the wrestler that fan can attach to?
Right.
And it's not Jay White, unfortunately.
It's not Jay White. And you know what? I just had speaking of unbelievably awesome guys, I've just popped it on again, and Chono was one of the announcers. So And the guy, and he still wears fucking shades. That's how amazing he is. Oh God, I love Chono. He's on my GWCW top 100. Yes, he is. Yes, he is. So that'll wrap up this week's first episode of Main Event for 2021. Brother Nate, you know, it is always a pleasure. Another year you and I are together, my friend, and I am blessed. Yes. It is amazing. And thank you for everything you've given to this show and given to me. You've made me a better podcaster as we start a new year. This is our eighth year of Main Event, by the way. Main Event started in February of 2014, and we're up to 164 episodes now.
Yes. It's been a fun ride so far, Scotty, and I'm looking forward to this next year. And yes, any time you need me to be your bag of Vance and guide you in this world, I'm here for it.
I love it. Yes, my bag of Vance.
I just come out of the mist and
that's right.
Somebody needs help.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh man. So yeah, it's always a pleasure. You can follow Nate on Twitter. Go ahead, you spell it because I always blow it.
At in the number 8 MOZAIK at Nate Mosaic on Twitter, which is also where you can watch a lot of the Kings of Sport live shows because we stream it on our YouTube page for the Kings of Sport, but we also stream it live on my Twitter page, which is probably easier to get to.
Exactly. Okay, good. And of course, you can follow me on Twitter at PTBPodfather. You can follow the brand at Place to Be Nation. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Steve will be back and we'll talk about Wrestle Kingdom officially because it'll be a couple weeks by that point. And Steve watched it. So we'll look ahead for New Japan. And maybe, just maybe, because it's been 2 weeks, the return of the classic TNA pay-per-view recap. You know, because Brother Nate, I have decided it's official. Impact Plus did not charge me in December. They charged me in November for a big pile of fucking nothing, but they did not charge me in December. So I think they just lost my subscription and said, look, dude, start from scratch. You're all good. So I started from scratch. So I have a brand new subscription. So my Impact Plus is back. And I think it's time for us to talk a little sweaty Brian Lawler again. A little SEX is what we need to talk about, right? So perhaps in 2 weeks, when Steve returns, we will we'll bring back the classic TNA pay-per-view recap. Because we are up to, I have it noted, Nate, the January 15th, 2003 weekly TNA pay-per-view. So, little Jarrett, little shitty Vince Russo promos, little Triple X, and yeah. So maybe we'll have that back in 2 weeks. But we'll definitely talk New Japan. We'll see how the Royal Rumble build is going and some other great stuff going on in wrestling. For Brother Nate, I am Brother Scott. You have been in the Main Event. We are in a brand new, luscious year. Let's enjoy it. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Hey, Scott Criscola.
Yes, Nate Milton. Can't wait.
Honestly, I don't even have one here. I just want
to... Damn! Oh,
Happy New Year, brother. Get you an H phone.
Happy New Year, everybody. No chance, so that's what you got. Up against a machine too strong. Pretty politicians buying souls for Russ or puppets. Of time.